James Baldwin birthed this baby.
I want to thank Dr. Shirley for just trying to capture his essence.
We made a film about a gay man, an immigrant who lived his life just unapologetically himself.
What it's about is not giving up.
I support this motion that the United Methodist Church allows people to feel their calling that God has put on their heart, no matter whom they love.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Tunisian government seeks to shutter sexual minorities advocacy group. Hollywood Hardware honors queer movie standouts. And prayers for inclusion go unanswered in Methodist maelstrom. Those stories and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Michael LeBeau.
And I'm Wenzel Jones.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending March 2nd, 2019. The Northern African nation of Tunisia is in the homophobic spotlight this week as the government tries to close down the country's major LGBTQ rights group. A 2016 court ruling granted Shams the legal right to operate. But government officials insist that the group objective to protect sexual minorities is contrary to Tunisian society's Islamic values, which reject homosexuality and prohibit such alien behavior. According to Wikipedia, 99% of Tunisia's 12 million people are Sunni Muslim. The government also argues that because Tunisian law criminalizes same-gender sex, any group that defends those acts should not be allowed to exist. Article 230 of Tunisia's Penal Code of 1913 jails consenting adults convicted of engaging in same-gender sex for up to 3 years. Shams registered in May 2015 as a non-governmental organization supporting the rights of gender and sexual minorities. The Tunisian government soon filed a complaint against the group for violating the anti-gay sex law. But 3 years ago, the court ruled that by merely existing, Shams was not in violation of any law, even though part of its work focused on getting Article 230 overturned. GayStar News reports that a hearing was scheduled this week on an appeal filed by the government of that 2016 court ruling that allows Shams to exist. Manir Batur is the president of Shams. He told NBC News that his group has saved hundreds of young gay lives. But he said that as of the end of 2018, there were 147 people in Tunisian prisons for offenses related to their sexual orientation or gender identity. Batur also believes that it's not a coincidence that the government's appeal of the ruling allowing his organization to exist comes during an election year.
Pink News reported this week on claims by the pro-LGBTQ group, Open for Business, that anti-queer discrimination is costing the East African nation of Kenya up to $1.3 billion a year. The group's conclusions follow last week's delay of a much-anticipated announcement by the country's Supreme Court in a case challenging the colonial-era law criminalizing same-gender sex as being against the order of nature. Convictions can bring up to 14 years in prison. The court announced that it will issue its ruling on May 24th. According to the report issued by Open for Business, Kenya's hostile environment towards LGBTQ people could be costing the country as much as 1.7% of its gross domestic product every year. Much of the country's economy is driven by tourism. Because of Kenya's anti-queer reputation, the country is losing from $64 million to $140 million a year in tourism income. The report cites the biggest impact of anti-queer bias as being healthcare costs, made even worse by the scourge of HIV/AIDS in the country, and the lack of access by LGBTQ people to treatment because of ever-present threats of anti-queer violence. The report estimated those costs at between $80 million and $1 billion. Open for Business is a coalition of multinational companies that advocate for LGBTQ inclusion around the world. Members include Virgin, Microsoft, Google, IBM, and KPMG.
An important hearing in the Armed Services Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives this week was dwarfed by President Trump's failed summit with North Korean tyrant Kim Jong-un, and former Trump fixer Michael Cohen testifying in an open session of the House Oversight Committee about the character of the President of the United States.
He is a racist. He is a con man. and he is a cheat.
In a week that also saw the release of a Reuters Ipsos poll showing that close to 60% of the American public supports military service by qualified transgender people, some of those enlistees became the first to ever formally testify in Congress. Navy Lieutenant Commander Blake Draman, Army Captain Olivia Stelick, Army Captain Jennifer Peace, Army Staff Sergeant Patricia King, Navy Corpsman Akira Wyatt, and combat veteran and doctor Jesse M. Ehrenfeld all appeared before the House Armed Services Committee on February 27th to testify on the president's proposed ban on trans military service. Now that Democrats control the House, Chairperson Jackie Speier of California convened the Armed Services Committee hearing. She's introduced a bill in Congress to prevent Trump from enacting his ban.
The trans service members said in their testimony that the ability to transition to the other gender made them stronger and better members of the armed forces, while Pentagon officials defended Trump's desire to bar people like them from enlisting. One of the more poignant moments during the hearing came when New Mexico Representative Deb Haaland, one of the first two Native American women elected to Congress in November, addressed the testifying service members directly.
I just first wanted to say to all of you that I'm so grateful for your service to our country. My dad was a 30-year career Marine, and my mom was a Navy veteran. Like, as a country, all of us should value our veterans. And I just want you to know that regardless of what the president says, there are millions of Americans who appreciate the service that you've given to our country. It's not everybody who will make a decision to say, I would die for my country, because a lot of people wouldn't. And I believe if there's one person that isn't fit to serve, we all know who that is right now, because that person devalues things that people want to do to make our country better and to move it forward. And although I can't apologize for that person, I can tell you that I will do everything in my power to make sure that we can bring back some civility and respect to the people who are serving our country. So I just wanted you to know that.
New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland.
Trump points to the disruption trans service members cause in the ranks to defend his ban. Virtually every credible researcher has found no such disruption. The other argument is what Trump calls the tremendous medical costs associated with transgender troops. In reality, the Defense Department's own numbers submitted to the committee ahead of the hearings this week reveal those costs represent about 0.001% of the U.S. military budget. In raw figures, that's about $8 million of the Pentagon's $716 billion budget. NBC News pointed out that transgender military health care costs amount to less than three trips the president takes on Air Force One to his private club, Mar-a-Lago, in Palm Beach, Florida. Taxpayers are paying about $3 million each time Trump makes that round trip. Committee Chair Jackie Speier told the Washington Blade that she's moving forward with her bill to block the ban and said she might attach it to a defense spending bill.
In other news, the British government has forced gay politician Lord Hayward to withdraw his measure in the House of Lords to extend marriage equality to Northern Ireland, the only major part of the United Kingdom without it. It's one of the major issues that's created a dysfunctional government in Northern Ireland since early 2017, with the ruling party blocking what is clearly more than enough votes to pass a marriage equality bill. But British Equalities Minister Baroness Williams told the House of Lords that it remains a matter for the Northern Irish government. She said the primary objective of her government is to restore the Northern Ireland Executive and Assembly, though she didn't say exactly what Prime Minister Theresa May plans to do about that. May is, of course, currently frying bigger Brexit fish. Interestingly, a report released by Parliament at the end of February concluded that marriage equality should be imposed on all UK overseas territories that don't already have it.
And finally, a group of drag queens organized a show and fundraiser along the U.S.-Mexico border in Brownsville, Texas, this week to benefit LGBTQ asylum seekers. Drag hostess Beatrix Lestrange said she and her sisters were protesting the president's declaration of a national emergency to fund a border wall and to highlight the poor treatment LGBTQ refugees have been getting from government authorities and fellow asylum seekers who are part of what Donald Trump has called the Southern Invasion. Lestrange told reporters that she tears up because they're already fleeing homophobia, transphobia, violence, trauma, only to come to the doorsteps of our country and encounter more of that. She posted the results of the drag show proceeds on Facebook. We raised a total of $646 for trans and queer asylum seekers tonight in less than 2 hours, she wrote. We don't want a wall, she added. We want justice for all asylum seekers, especially the most marginalized in the queer and trans community. LaStrange challenged other LGBTQ groups across the country to protest Trump and his policies using their own form of activism.
That's NewsWrap, global queer news with attitude for the week ending March 2nd, 2019. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is written by Greg Gordon, produced with Brian DeShazer, recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at the ever-updating thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Michael LeBeau.
When Hollywood handed out its biggest trophies of the year, queer portrayals grabbed a notable number of them. The traditional Oscar Eve Independent Spirit Awards on February 23rd honored movies made outside the major film studio system. Richard E. Grant was named Best Supporting Actor that night for his portrayal of a gay man opposite Melissa McCarthy's lesbian literary sham artist in Can You Ever Forgive Me? Grant paid tribute to one of his queer predecessors.
The person that most inspired my performance was an actor called Ian Charlson, who played the lead in Chariots of Fire in 1981. He died of AIDS at the age of 40 in 1990. And this movie, more than anything, is an homage to that generation of men that were wiped out by that disease.
Can You Ever Forgive Me also took the Best Screenplay Indie Spirit Award. If Beale Street Could Talk won awards for Best Director, Best Supporting Actress, and Best Feature. It's based on the novel by iconic queer author James Baldwin.
I've paid my dues, time after time. I've done my sentence, but committed no crime. And bad mistakes I've made a few. I've had my share of sins in my days, but I'm the brave.
Queer's current out frontman Adam Lambert led the legendary band to open the 91st annual Academy Awards on February 24th. It set the tone for stories about queer men winning big at this year's Oscars, even though the subject was not always out there. Fresh from her Indie Spirit win as Best Supporting Actress the night before, Regina King got an Oscar for the same category. She thanked the celebrated creator of If Beale Street Could Talk, her director, Moonlight's Barry Jenkins, and her own creator.
To be standing here representing one of the greatest artists of our time, James Baldwin. It's a little surreal. James Baldwin birthed this baby. And Barry, you nurtured her. You surrounded her with so much love and support. So it's appropriate for me to be standing here because I'm an example of what it looks like when support and love is poured into someone. Mom, I love you so much.
From Best Picture nominee Bohemian Rhapsody, Best Sound Editor John Warhurst, and Best Film Editor John Ottman each gave shout-outs to the queer man whose story they helped bring to life.
We'd like to thank all of Queen and the team, the full team, for the great music, for all the support, and a special nod to Freddie as well.
This film, I always like to say, as the entire cast and crew likes to always say, was a labor of love. And I think Freddie Mercury, in a way, kind of brought us all together from wherever he is, and just like he did his audience.
Mahershala Ali repeated his Moonlight Oscar win, this time for his Best Supporting Actor performance as Dr. Don Shirley, the closeted gay musical virtuoso he portrayed in The Green Book. Ali paid tribute to the real-life musician.
I want to thank Dr. Shirley for just trying to capture his essence. Just trying to capture Dr. Shirley's essence pushed me to my ends, and which is a reflection of the person he was and the life that he lived. And I thank him.
In the shallow, we're far from the shallow now.
Queer artist Lady Gaga's Shallow won the Oscar for Best Song. Her acceptance speech ended with her trademark believe in yourself exhortation.
It's not about winning, but what it's about is not giving up. If you have a dream, fight for it. There's a discipline for passion, and it's not about how many times you get rejected or but you fall down or you're beaten up. It's about how many times you stand up and are brave and you keep on going. Thank you.
Rami Malek triumphed in the Best Actor category for playing Freddie Mercury. Malek referred to the sexual orientation of Queen's frontman in his acceptance speech, but the words gay man were replaced with special person in the translated telecast people saw in China.
I think about what it would have been like to tell little Bubba Rami that one day this might happen to him, and I think his curly-haired little mind would be blown. That kid was struggling with his identity, trying to figure himself out. And I think to anyone struggling with theirs and trying to discover their voice, listen, we made a film about a gay man, an immigrant who lived his life just unapologetically himself. I am the son of immigrants from Egypt. I'm a first generation American. And part of my story is being written right now. And I could not be more grateful to each and every one of you and everyone who believed in me for this moment. Thank you so much.
In all, Bohemian Rhapsody won 4 Oscars. The Green Book won 3, including Best Picture.
Life is gay. It's great to be a celebrity, an actor's life for me.
Every actor worth his salt strives to be honest and true in his portrayals on the stage or screen. Hello, this is Ian McKellen, and that's exactly what This Way Out does as well, right here on this station.
If we can be a church which brings Jesus to people who are told can't be loved, that's what I want our church to be.
Is there enough love to go around in the United Methodist Church? Another contentious vote later in the program. Personal aha moments and the swirl of world events elevate a National Book Award finalist to the top of the list for This Way Out queer life and literature commentator Janet Mason.
One of the things that I value as a lesbian is being connected to the rest of the world. Hence the rainbow flag and the saying that we are everywhere. We are. That fact led me to the novel that I was recently immersed in called Disoriental by Nagar Javadi, published in 2018 by Europa Editions. It was translated from the French by Tina Cover. That the narrator identifies as a lesbian, one could legitimately argue, is a sublayer of the book. But looking through the same prism through a different angle, one could argue that the narrator's sexuality is critical. Being a lesbian from an extremely homophobic culture gave the narrator an extra layer of courage to tell this important story. Disoriental, a finalist for the National Book Award, is the story of a young girl who grows up in revolutionary Iran and goes through the Iranian Revolution with an inside view provided to her by her revolutionary father. This novel, which was written with a protagonist who lived in Iran with her family, who later were all forced into exile, was for me filled with aha moments. The protagonist's revolutionary, intellectual father was opposed to the regimes of both the Shah and Khomeini. The story is told from the perspective of an adult woman who is going through a medical process in France, the country she and her family was exiled to become a parent. The narrator writes that she always valued childhood as the best part of life and has long been determined to continue her line through giving birth. I was particularly impressed with Javadi's handling of the importance of history and how personal history intertwines with world events. The writing of this novel caused her to reflect on the human rights violations in her native land. In Iran, homosexuality is considered a supreme violation of God's will and is a crime punishable by death. Women, as well as men, sometimes only teenagers, are blindfolded and hanged from cranes in public. Homosexuality is generally not cited as the main reason for these executions due to pressure from Western countries and the fear that these acts will damage their complex relationships with Iran. In any case, it's estimated that since 1979, more than 4,000 of these public hangings have taken place. I was riveted by Disoriental, and turning its pages, I ponder the mysterious forces of hate and existence and the importance of familial bonds. In particular, the book raises the bonds between fathers and daughters. Ultimately, I found it to be not only a good read, but a work of literature that brought me to reflect more keenly on my own life. This is Janet Mason with commentary on queer life and literature for This Way Out.
I'm Ellen DeGeneres, and you're listening to This Way Out. That was without cue cards, people.
Way down deep in each of life,
God would break open the sky.
God led the people to the promised land.
God would break open the sky.
A special conference of the United Methodist Church that was intended to resolve the denomination's issues around sexuality ended in a major disappointment for its LGBTQ adherents and their allies. The UMC has been debating the ordination of openly practicing homosexuals and same-gender marriages for decades. Delegates teetered on the edge of schism at the last regular quadrennial meeting 2 years ago when bishops succeeded in stalling a vote to allow further discussion. That discussion was supposed to culminate in a final vote at the special 3-day gathering that ended on February 27th. Two proposals were presented. A one-church plan backed by the bishops would have allowed individual congregations or regions to set their own rules for equality in ordination and marriages. However, a coalition of conservative U.S. and African Methodists led more than half the delegates to approve the traditional plan. It closes the loopholes that have allowed queer clergy and same-gender marriages to slip through in spite of the formal rules. It also provides a path for pro-LGBTQ churches to leave the denomination if they cannot obey. Parts of the traditional plan have already been declared unconstitutional by the UMC's Judicial Council, so the opposition's next move was to get the plan as approved referred back to the Judicial Council for a ruling. Aspiring Methodist minister J.J. Warren gave an impassioned speech in support of that motion.
My name is J.J. Warren from the beautiful Upper New York Conference, and I am a lay reserve delegate. I want to speak for this motion because I think there are subtleties that can slip through that we may not have been aware are unconstitutional. And for me and the younger generation that is the church now among you and who want to be the church together with you for the future as well, We desire a church that seeks the justice of God, a church that doesn't waste its money on a conference and come out with no decision because it was unconstitutional. The pain that would happen from this crucifixion of putting the nails in our Methodist church, the pain of this death might be worth a resurrection, but I'd like to see first if that can happen together without being called unconstitutional with whatever we decide. So I support this motion to put this before the Judicial Council so that we together can make a decision for the church, hopefully one that ensures that wherever we are, the United Methodist Church continues and allows people to feel their calling that God has put on their heart, no matter whom they love. So that is my support. And as someone who has grown up in our church, as someone who is gay and goes to the least religious college in the U.S., my evangelism on campus has grown. We have brought people to Jesus because they said they have not heard this message before. They didn't know God could love them because their churches said God didn't. And so if we can be a church which brings Jesus to people who are told can't be loved, that's what I want our church to be. And that's the Methodist church that I love and that I want to be a pastor in one day. I want to be a pastor in the Methodist church because I love our tradition. I love all of you. We are the church together. This is the body of Christ, and we are stronger together than we are apart. And no plan to separate us can unite us like God's love. We are the church. We are God's children. Let us be the church together.
All right, thank you.
That was a frustrated, aspiring Gay United Methodist Church minister, J.J. Warren. The conference agreed to send the approved plan to the Judicial Council for a ruling at its April meeting. Few supporters believe it will pass constitutional muster, but heaven only knows what will happen after that. Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Michael LeBeau and Wenzel Jones, produced with Brian DeShazer, and from Janet Mason. You heard music performed by Nelson Riddle and his orchestra and Dolores Berry. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, Paul Bannon, Christopher Matthews, Judd Proctor and Brian Burns, Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley, and all of the listener donors who make this program possible. You can join them by visiting thiswayout.org. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KPOV LP Bend, Oregon, CKDU Halifax, Nova Scotia, WLUW Chicago, Illinois, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Now y'all stay tuned.